Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have back once again on the program Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County and is here once a month on a Tuesday. We talk about lawn and garden care, and it's your opportunity to call in with questions. You got a problem? You're looking for a suggestion on a particular plant for a particular spot? Any and all of that is certainly welcome. We've talked about houseplants, too. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So at any point here, if you have questions, you give us a call, and Sandy will see if she can help you. Thanks for being here once again.
Good morning.
Just before we get going here, maybe we'll get some calls lined up. I expect that you might like to mention the garden walk that's coming up in a couple weeks, 10 days, something like that.
It'll be a beautiful day. I just know it. It'll be cool. The rain will have stopped.
I'm going to write that down. I'm writing that down. There's a record here, you know.
Okay, this is taped. Oh, well. Saturday, June 21st is the Champaign County Master Gardeners Garden Walk, and we've been doing this for a number of years now, and it runs from 9 to 4 p.m. It's on a Saturday, rain or shine. And I think, you know, the Master Gardeners really try hard to get a variety of gardens, and there's 8 gardens on, 7 public, and then the Idea Garden. And I think this year they've really outdone themselves from large gardens, really expansive ones, to smaller, older gardens, to younger. Maybe you have a new home in a subdivision, not sure what to do to make it look unique. I think we have one of those gardens as well. So Saturday, June 21st from 9 to 4, they can get tickets at pretty much any of the garden centers in the Champaign-Urbana area, as well as our extension office at 801 North Country Fair Drive in Champaign. And if they can't figure all that out, they can just call us at 217-333-7672. And this is the Master Gardener's major fundraiser. This is how they're able to pay for all the things at the Idea Garden. And the other fun thing at the Idea Garden is vendors. You know, because gardeners, we love to look at gardens, but we also love to buy things for our gardens. So
garden stuff.
It just takes care of all your vices in one day. I love that. So you can come to the Idea Garden and check out all the garden vendors there as well as check out the Idea Garden. So lots of fun, okay. June 21st.
All right, very good. And we have some callers here, so let's start talking with folks. We'll start with Champaign, and this is line number one. Hello.
Hi. My peonies have taken a real beating in terms of rain and weather and the whole bit. When can I cut them back, and to what level do you cut them back?
Well, actually, what you want to do, you really don't want to cut them back. I realize they're probably laying on the ground at this point, maybe not all that terribly attractive. But to realize, you know, since they are perennial, you have to leave that green foliage on there so they're able to, you know, make food, photosynthesize, do all that great stuff so that they can replenish the roots and then come back in great guns the next year.
Okay.
So really, all you want to do now is just cut off the old flower buds.
Oh, just cut off the flower buds.
Yep, cut off the flower buds. And if it's still sort of, you know, laying flat, you can, sometimes I trim it just a little bit more to hopefully get off some of that weight so it stands up a little bit better. But sometimes just getting off those heavy flower buds is enough that they'll stand up a little bit more, or you can sort of help them out. But you really need to leave the foliage on, let it die naturally in the fall. And that's really true of all our perennials.
Oh, okay. Well, and put a tombstone there, right?
It'll be fine. Believe me. You can see I'm very optimistic this morning.
Maybe Band-Aid. Okay.
Thanks. All right,
thanks. Well, it's funny because I remember that last time a caller called in and said she was concerned about her peonies, and because I think the issue was that she felt that there just weren't that many buds on them. Mm-hmm. And I opined that I thought, well, maybe they were just kind of, or maybe it was that there were buds, but that they hadn't flowered yet.
I
said, well, maybe they were just kind of behind where they should be. And so after that, I started paying attention to ours, and we have several different places around the yard, really growing in very different conditions. Mm-hmm. Some are in pretty heavy shade. Mm-hmm. Some, they get a lot of sun. And I guess ours did about what I would expect, although, interestingly enough, the ones that get the most sun, I think, actually, they were a little short on flowers this year.
Oh, really?
So,
oh,
okay. I don't know. Everything seemed to, you know, the foliage seems to be healthy, and they definitely did flower.
Yeah. And timing, but timing was really off, was what I noticed. Because my early ones that normally would bloom, you know, really pretty early in May, actually bloomed at the same time as my mid-May ones. So the early ones came later, and it seemed like, actually everything seemed like it was a little bit later than they normally would. So it was kind of interesting to see how things flowered. And I've never had my early ones and my mid-season ones bloom at the same time. It was really really weird. Yeah. Plus, they clashed. So I never want to happen again. I know. Clashed.
Well, some I marvel still at some things, and maybe it's just because there's been so much moisture around my yard. Things seem to be pretty happy. I have a clematis, or perhaps you say clematis, that has never had as many flowers on it. It's just starting. It's now started to bloom, and it's sort of a late blooming one. So it's about the right time, and it's a purple. Blue-purple one. And it's just an unbelievable number of buds on this.
Yeah. For those plants that like that kind of cooler, moist weather, they've enjoyed it. And you were talking about clematis. I saw one that had a huge flower. It almost looked like a peony flower. It was so large. And the folks said that it really was much bigger this year. I think the roses are magnificent right now. They've come on a little bit earlier, but they've really loved this moisture and the cool weather. So it's one of those things you kind of, you know, some plants are really suffering if they're actually sitting in water and they don't like that. But for those, you know, some of them are really looking better than they ever have, I think.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll go on here to talk with someone in Arthur, line number two. Hello.
Good morning, you guys. How are you?
Good.
Pretty good.
Good, good. Hey, after the recent storms, my wife's vegetable garden sat under maybe 6 or 7 inches of water for about 2 days.
Wow.
And she was wondering if, and it actually looks really good, all things considered, but she was wondering if there's going to be any problems with bugs or disease after that happened?
Well, probably not necessarily. If they still look good, then that's a great sign, because usually what we'll see after things have been sitting in water for even a couple of days like that, well, we'll see a couple of things. If it gets really hot and they're sitting in water, sometimes they just scorch up, and it just, you'll sometimes see this with corn and some of the other things where it just scorches because it just, the water gets so hot. The other thing sometimes you'll see is that the leaves will turn yellow because the roots have been rotted. So that would be one of the diseases we might see. Obviously, it was caused by an environmental thing, but, you know, we'll see the roots will rot, and then they'll start to turn yellow, or they'll wilt. Every time it gets a little bit hot, they'll wilt, and then they might even recover later on. You know, this is after the water has subsided. So sometimes you'll see those kind of things. So if right now, you know, the water has subsided and they're looking pretty good, then I say you really, I think you're in good shape.
Awesome. Maybe we lucked out.
Yeah, I think so, because I had talked to people that had to actually replant their tomatoes. They sat there for so long that their roots will rot. But the plants tell you pretty quick whether they're going to survive this whole thing. But it certainly can be some disease issues. What we might see on tomatoes, too, that we're really going to have to watch for is, because we get all this moist weather, sometimes we'll get some leaf spot diseases as well, which might be pretty severe this year. So.
Okay, well,
so good luck.
Thank you.
Let's go to Urbana. This is next, line number three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have two holly trees, a male and a female, and they were looking very bad last year. And I had a arborist come, and he did a treatment. I think it was with iron sulfate. Anyway, it was diagnosed as chlorosis, and so he came and he did a treatment where he had this wand. I guess it was called a wand, or it's a metal tube with a hose attached, and he stuck that down in the ground all around both trees. And so they do look better this year, and then. We agreed that he was going to do this again this year, and he wanted to do it before March 1st. He said that was the best time. And I've called him 2 or 3 times, and to date he's never come. So then I have this University of Illinois Extension iron chlorosis publication. And it says a lack of available iron produces a variety of symptoms. Chlorosis is the most common symptom. Chlorosis can be confused with zinc and magnesium deficiencies. And then it says that, I guess, iron chelates are most effective in producing better-looking trees. And it says, for treating trees, dissolve 1 pound of iron sulfate in 20 gallons of water and add 2 ounces of spreader sticker. Well, how can I do that? I don't think I can deal with 20 gallons of water. So what can I do? Can you tell me somebody else I can get? Or is there some way I can do this myself?
Okay. Well, and iron chloruses is one of those things where there's a deficiency of iron, but it's often we'll see it on plants that like a more acidic soil than what we have here. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a two-pronged thing. We try to acidify the soil enough so that the iron, because iron is more available when the soils are more acidic.
Right. You need the acid to dissolve the minerals.
Right, in order to make it available. And so that's why sometimes you'll see these iron chelates, because it's actually in a formulation that the plants can go ahead and take up, even if the soil isn't acidic enough. So that's sometimes you'll see. So what you could do is actually just go to a garden center or someplace like that and just ask them for, because there's a couple ways you can do it. You can actually do a foliar feed, which would be a foliar spray.
Yeah, I did that a little bit too myself.
Yeah, and that certainly, if the plants are small enough, you can certainly do that. That's not a long-term solution. It's a short-term solution, but it certainly, a lot of times you'll see a response and they'll green up for you a little bit better, thinking that later on or as you go along, you'll actually do more within the soil to make the soil more acidic and make the iron more available. So you could at least probably do that as well, and then and also to garden centers, they can help you out. They sell iron chelates and some of those things as well. And on the label, once you get the product on the label, it'll give you things like, you know, whether you're just going to do a gallon or whatever.
So I can get this, I can get what I need. I can get this, get iron sulfate from
right.
garden center.
Right. Pretty much all the garden centers are going to carry things like iron sulfate, iron chelate, all those kind of products. And so just ask them, you know, for that what the situation is, and they should be able to help you out from there.
Okay, so you think I can do this myself?
You can't, you know, it's up to you. I don't know how big the plants are. Foliar feed might be tough, but
big trees. They're
right.
20, 30 feet high.
And if they're looking halfway decent, which it sounds like they are, you may want to just concentrate on doing something with the soil to sort of keep that going and maybe not worry quite so much about spraying it. If they're looking halfway decent and the leaves seem to be fairly green.
Well, so, now are you talking about actually spraying the leaves of the tree or spraying the ground around the
two
tree?
Different things. We're talking about two different methods. With plants that are severely yellow, as in very yellow, we might see this in blueberries and rhododendrons and certainly hollies as well. Sometimes we go ahead and do a leaf where you actually spray the leaves. Mm-hmm. So you try to get it, it's a quicker solution, and the plants green up faster, but it's a short-term solution because you're only helping those leaves that are on there right now. It doesn't help it in the future. So that's why sometimes we'll do it in severe cases. We'll do this foliar or this leaf feeding in severe cases. If not, then I would probably concentrate more on doing things within the soil, as in your iron sulfate, your iron chelate, those kinds of things. So it sounds like you're in the soil method, or the soil method would probably be the best for you at this point.
Okay. So
Does that make sense?
Use that wand thing?
No, you don't necessarily. That was just his method, and I would just, a lot of times it's just adding it into a watering can, and, you know, the labels help you out. They're not, you know, I think that information from the U of I Extension might be more in line for commercial folks, it sounds like, because most of us aren't going to have 20-gallon containers. Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. You have a lot of trees. So, right. But once you get the product, they'll help you out, and then on the product, it'll tell you how much to put in a gallon of water, all those kind of good things.
Okay, well, thank you.
Okay, good luck.
Our guest this morning here in this part of Focus 580 is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and once a month on a Tuesday, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care, and your questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. Now, there was something in particular that you wanted to have a chance to talk about that it sounds like maybe people are doing some stuff and you would say, nah, don't do this.
Yeah. And actually, this is a perfect segue because we do have these plants out there that like most of our soils around here are just slightly acidic or more neutral. So they might be 6.5, 6.8, something like that. So just slightly acidic. For some plants, that's not acidic enough. They need it 4.5 or certainly 5. So that would be things like blueberries, rhododendrons, azaleas, hollies, even things like itias, the summer sweets, those kind of things, like a more acidic soil. And how you see that happening is what will happen is you'll get the leaves will turn yellow, but the veins will stay green. It's almost pretty in a very sick sort of way. But so very yellow leaf, but green veins. Mm-hmm. So that tells you that you're having some iron deficiency problems or could be having some iron deficiency problems, and it'll show up in these acid-loving plants. Okay, where am I going with all this? I think the one thing that we have seen over at least over the last 5 years or so is this tremendous popularity of hydrangeas. And hydrangeas are one of those interesting plants is you can actually change the color of the flower by adding aluminum sulfate. And aluminum sulfate does a couple of things. Obviously, it supplies a certain amount of aluminum. And aluminum is actually needed in the process of making hydrangeas into blue flowers. They need that aluminum in the soil. They need that aluminum available in order to turn them blue, because blue seems to be the pop. I don't know what's wrong with pink, because that's the other direction. But, you know, people like blue flowers. Okay, so we put on aluminum sulfate. It also acidifies the soil and makes aluminum more available, because aluminum is like iron in that it's more available in acidic soils. So that's a good thing. Sounds like a perfect thing, right? So everybody's got aluminum sulfate out there. They're adding it to their hydrangeas. Sounds like a good thing, right? The problem is what we're seeing is that people are starting to use aluminum sulfate on all these other acid-loving plants that are very susceptible to aluminum toxicity. And so we're starting to see aluminum toxicity on things like blueberries because they figure, well, I got this aluminum sulfate. It acidifies the soil. I'm going to throw some on my blueberries. Well, the problem is blueberries, rhododendrons, are very susceptible to aluminum toxicity. And how that's going to show up is something we might not even know what's going on. You see reduced root growth. That's probably the biggest thing. But you just see loss of vigor. And you just think, oh, they're not looking very good. Or it might even look like iron deficiency. So you might even add more aluminum sulfate, thinking you're trying to help them. So the bottom line is, don't use aluminum sulfate on anything but hydrangeas. Just don't do it. If you want to acidify the soil on things like blueberries, all these other plants, use something like ammonium sulfate. That would be probably a good thing. If you're actually able to do something before you plant them, you'd use what's called flowers of sulfur, the actually powdered sulfur form. That would be something we would add into the soil. It takes a little bit longer to react than aluminum sulfate, but ammonium sulfate along with the elemental sulfur is going to do what you need to do for blueberries and rhododendrons and not, you know, cause damage by adding aluminum sulfate. So it's a little bit confusing, but I think it's one of those things that people have to be very aware of. So aluminum sulfate only for hydrangeas. Okay. That's it.
So, and if you're going to do that for your hydrangeas, because what you want to do is you want to have blue flowers,
right,
when do you, would you start doing that? Like now, or should
sure
you have been doing it already?
Normally, you'd want to do it, you know, as they're starting to produce the flowers. Uh-huh. You know, you'd want to make sure the aluminum. But it's one of those things that I would probably, if I was truly trying to do this with hydrangeas, I probably, before I planted them, I might add some at that time. I might also add some flowers of sulfur. But you have to read the label. It'll tell you how much to add depending on how much square footage you have of property or land or planting area. So you have to read the label. Don't overdo it. And really try to acidify the soil. And actually, most probably our soils naturally have enough aluminum in them for us to get a blue-ish flower if you just acidify the soil. So if you don't want to buy aluminum sulfate, you actually could use ammonium sulfate or flowers of sulfur like you're using on your blueberries. And it probably would acidify it enough that you get a bluish flower. Now, if you're that competitive hydrangea grower and you have to have that intense blue, then you are going to have to use the aluminum sulfate. But you want to do it before the flowers really start to form and do their thing.
Okay.
So there you go. And the rest of the story is.
You mean there's more?
No, that's it.
Oh, okay. We have some other callers. Next we'll talk with someone in Mahomet, line number one. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I have some Veronica and some catmint in my garden out front that has done the strangest thing this year. It almost looks like an animal has laid in the middle of the bush, and it's all flattened down, coming from the center. And I was wondering, what is causing that?
You know, sometimes the perennials, and I've certainly seen this, not so much with Veronica, I've seen it, but certainly with catmint, I've seen it, is that it'll actually it grow, because they're growing so well, that they flop over.
Okay.
So it's just a matter, I think, they're just growing so well that that's what you're seeing. And sometimes we'll even see this with sedum and some of those. Now, did you fertilize them at all or do anything like that?
We didn't fertilize them necessarily, but we always work a bunch of compost in the ground
right
before we plant. And so I think that, you know, it has
right
enough nutrients available. But this is almost like it's flat to the ground, my Veronica is. It's
right.
You can see, you know, the base of the stems in the middle and
right
kind of a little bit of poofing up on the side.
Right.
But they bloomed and they were really pretty, but now they've kind of, they're just
terribly ugly looking right now.
Right, but they do that sometimes. I think they just really grew well this year. I think we've seen a lot. But what I was getting at is you don't want to fertilize. Sometimes if they actually have almost too much nitrogen in there, they just sort of grow themselves out to the, and they get too tall and lanky, and then they fall over. So I think you're just seeing kind of a combination of some pretty good growing conditions to the point where they just grew so much they got top heavy. And then we've had some rain. Oh, we've had a little bit of rain. That helps to flatten them as well. And then, you know, who knows? You might have had a rabbit that's helping itself out and found a nice little spot. So what I think the good news is with things like catmint, you can, as soon as they're done flowering, I would chop those things back.
Right.
They look better anyway.
I always do.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So I would just chop them back. But I think you're just seeing a combination of things here, because those wouldn't be plants we would typically think would fall over. You know,
right.
We know peonies will do it on some of them, and certainly asters and some of those will fall over. So I think you're just seeing a combination of things. So
if I trimmed them back in the spring when they started growing and kind of encouraged them to bush out a little bit more, would that help?
You absolutely can do that.
Okay.
You absolutely can do that. What you find is they'll flower a little bit later,
mm-hmm.
and then often you'll get more flowers, but they may be smaller. And
okay.
You may notice that probably more on the Veronica. It won't have maybe the huge spikes, but, mm-hmm. you know, more of them, and they'll flower a little bit later. So actually, it's a great technique to keep things smaller.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Right, thanks for the call. I was at a local plant place here earlier this spring, and I saw some catmint. I thought, no, this is a very attractive plant. So I bought some of these and took them home.
Uh-oh.
And planted them. And my wife says, you realize that's catnip.
Two different things.
And she was reading, we had a book, and then in fact, it was all a book about growing herbs, and
mm-hmm.
it showed the plant in there, and it said that this is catnip. And in fact, what it said is that sometimes cats they'll just go nuts, and they will, in fact, if you have a bunch of catmint, they'll just lay on it. They'll
right.
go so crazy for it. And I'm thinking, oh, great. Now I planted here. But then there seems to be some disagreement about...
Yeah, well, they're two different plants.
So they actually are two different plants.
Yes, yes, yes. Catmint and catnip are two different plants.
Okay.
And catnip actually has a fairly large... leaf on it, and that's usually how you tell. It has a big leaf, and of course I'm showing this and no one can see my hands showing how big they are,
yeah.
But they're several inches across. I mean, they're a fairly large leaf, and
okay.
on cat mint it's a pretty small leaf, so there's definitely a difference in the look of the and also usually normally with cat mint the flowers are blue, whereas on catnip you don't see them white. Most of the time you buy stuff in the grocery store or the garden centers, you're going to see cat mint.
Mm-hmm.
It's
okay.
a great perennial.
Well,
and
I thought
really
it was
like
a very pretty, a very pretty plant, and I thought,
and
you
it
know,
grows and grows and grows and blooms and blooms.
And I suppose that it is a mint, and so will it spread like mint?
The one thing I've noticed, not so much with the cultivars, the named varieties,
uh-huh.
I haven't noticed so much of a spread. The clump itself will spread. What I have noticed in the cat mint is in the non-named varieties, it reseeds itself. And you will get all these little plants popping up all over the place because it's reseeding itself. And I haven't noticed it. It doesn't seem to send out the runners and stuff like you typically would think of with the mint. It does have a fragrance. Cat mint does have a fragrance, that minty kind of fragrance.
Right.
But I will tell you, I have a cat that's around my yard, and I also have lots of cat mint. And I've never seen that cat really roll. It kind of sort of, you know, is interested, and it'll smell it. And once in a while, it kind of rolls around in it. But it doesn't, like, go crazy and nuts like they do with catnip and all that kind
okay.
of stuff. So I'm not collecting all, you know, all the cats in the neighborhood aren't coming to my
all
house.
Well, see, that's what I was worried about.
I know that's what you're afraid
of. It would be a cat magnet that it would come from all over Urbana to pummel my cat mint. All right. Well,
I think they're great
now.
Perennials because they're tough,
yeah.
don't have a lot of insect and disease problems. Blooms are all hard out. When they're done blooming, hack them down. They'll bloom again. How can you beat that?
Oh, that sounds pretty good to me. All right. Let's go to Joliet. Talk with somebody else here. Line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I'm John calling from Joliet.
Hi.
And I'm new to Joliet in this part of the country, and I have resurrected an abandoned chicken yard into which I planted new tomato, pepper plants, and cucumbers, and beans, and so forth. They're doing absolutely marvelously. I can't believe it. The only trouble is now they are being eaten with all little holes and little stuff is on the flowers, and I want to put some kind of spray on them. So that, you know, I they'll not only kill whatever's eating it, but I can eat these vegetables later on without it causing me problems. Can you suggest the name of a sprinkling-on compound or something that I might use to do that?
So now what kind of vegetables did you have again? You had tomatoes?
Well, the tomato and pepper plants and small herb arrangement of of basil and parsley and odds and ends, cucumbers and green beans and zucchini. It's just kind of a salad vegetable garden.
Right.
I didn't expect it to do that well, but they look like they've been inspired by the Amazon jungle. They're doing so well.
It's
and now
all
I'm
that old poultry manure.
Yes, and now I'm disappointed that I know I put nothing in the soil. It's just leftover, chicken droppings from a long time ago. And now I don't want them eaten alive by whatever's eating them. Can you make a suggestion?
Right. Well, the thing I've noticed is, at least what I notice, is that there's flea beetles out there like crazy. They seem to have done very well through the winter, and then they come back with great guns. And they leave really tiny holes, but lots of them.
Yeah, yes,
is
ma'am.
That kind of what it is?
Exactly, yeah, that's what
yeah,
it is.
Yeah. So yeah. Flea beetles, probably the thing to look for is, depending on how you feel about different types of pesticides, but one of the things you could use is even things like rotenone.
Okay.
That you can also get pesticides with what are called permethrin.
Would you spell permethrin?
It's P as in Paul,
yes.
E-R,
right.
M as in Mary,
right.
E-T as in Tom,
right.
H-R-I-N as in Nancy.
And
permethrin.
The other one is that a powder you just sprinkle on it?
No, most of these are going to be sprays. Now, rotenone you can usually find as a powder. That would be the other thing. And oh. 7 is another thing that can be used, which is carbaryl.
Never.
But I will tell you, especially with carbaryl, it's one of those things that's toxic to bees and all the beneficials and stuff as well. So normally we like to use probably something a little bit different, like the permethrin or something along those lines.
And is that a spray, ma'am?
Usually
I sprinkle it on.
Usually you'd have that as a spray.
And how often do I put it on? Once a week or?
Read the label, but generally it'll tell you it probably depending on how bad it is, but usually once a week is going to be plenty. And normally this is one of those things, you kind of wait them out. They come out really great guns because there's nothing else to eat. The corn isn't up, the soybeans aren't up, all the things aren't up yet. And so they hit our gardens because that's some of the lush stuff that's going on. But so usually we sort of wait them out, and then they're not quite as bad later. In other words, you probably aren't going to have to do this, all season long.
Okay, so even my things like my basil and the other stuff that's sort of being eaten now, it will come back eventually?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And with all these pesticides, just make sure read the label, make sure it's meant for edible crops, and also read the label between application and harvest. They'll say, you need to wait a day or depending on what it is.
Well, I just wanted to hear from you that permethrin or what is not, I'm going to be eating this in August and having horrors in my throat or body or something.
Yeah, and sometimes you kind of have to decide on, like I noticed some of my heirloom tomatoes are being hit by flea beetles, and I've never seen those on tomatoes before, but they really like these heirloom ones. Well, it's a few holes. I'm not going to worry about it right now. It's one of those things you sort of decide, is the damage so bad that it's going to hurt the plant? And so sometimes you just sort of wait it out and figure it's not really going to hurt it. Eventually, the flea beetles will be gone. It'll grow out of it, and I'm not going to worry about it. So I guess you have to decide, just looking at it, is this something that they can just sort of tolerate? And a lot of times, especially with our vegetable crops, they can tolerate it, and you'll still get plenty of vegetables.
And one last question, please. Because I've become a green person, or I'm tempting to be, especially with all these horrors of salmonella and all the horrors, I listen to this station regularly. Are there booklets available from your university to tell us about this so we don't have to take your time on the radio? I mean, it's delightful talking to you, but is there some way we can write, or can I call the 800 Iran to get some kind of booklets on this for this part of the country?
When you say booklets, are you talking about like in vegetable gardening?
Yeah, vegetables.
Okay, actually, we have the university has a great book, and I'd say that even if I wasn't with the U of I, Vegetable Gardening in the Midwest. And you can go online, go to the U of I Extension website, go to publications, and then go in there to their publications, and you can actually order it online. Or you can check out your local Extension office, and you can get that office on the website as well. You can find out the address for that office. But you can also order Vegetable Gardening for the Midwest. It's great. It gives you all the basics, when to plant stuff, what problems you might have, how to solve them. Really good. What varieties to grow. Excellent.
And I will just take one more moment. Would you say what yours is UI, the University of Illinois, UI at where? On the net,
it's extension UIUC.edu.
The extension dot. Go ahead.
UIUC.
IUC.
UIUC.
IUC.
You might just Google University of Illinois Extension, and it'll pop up.
Okay.
Yeah, I just University of Illinois Extension. You get the main website. It's just confusing with it's a University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and that's where
you get UIUC.
It's very confusing. So just go to University of Illinois Extension. It'll pop up. Go to that main website. Look at publications, and you may find other things in there that really help you out for local info. And also check with your local extension office. There are also a wealth of information when it comes to publications and those kind of things.
Thank you.
Great.
So much.
Good luck, and welcome to Joliet.
We're a little bit past our midpoint here. Sandy Mason is our guest. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And we're here once a month, always on a Tuesday. We talk about lawn and garden care, and questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Rantoul, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
My name is Elena, and I'm in Rantoul. And my question is about retaking plants. For instance, I have a lilac tree. It's not actually a tree. It's more like a bush. And I want to replant it at our new home in Highland, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know exactly the best way to do that. We've had family members come up, and this bush is huge, and it just proliferates, you know, the backyard. So taking some of it with us is not going to, you know, take away from the beauty of the tree itself, or the bush, I should say, itself. But what is the best way to transport? And I know the soil down there is different. You know, it's near Edwardsville. It's in, you know, southern Illinois, and the soil is different. What is the best way to transport it? And then what do I do when I get it replanted?
Mm-hmm. So you are planning on taking the whole shrub? Did I understand that?
No, I'm just going to take, you know, some of the new starts, basically, that are all around the bush.
Okay, there you go. Okay.
Yeah.
I would go ahead and pot them up. I'd go ahead and, you know, and try to actually grow them on as best you can. I don't know when the timing is on when you're leaving and when you're planning on doing this. You might actually...
A few weeks, yeah.
Pardon?
It's going to be a few weeks, so I guess I should do that right away.
Right. You might go ahead and do that now, and then that'll give you an opportunity to see if it's going to live or not. You know, they should, because they're pretty tough, but you might do that on a couple of them, see how well they're going to live, and that way you do have another chance if, for some reason, you know, one of those didn't make it. But then you grow them on, and then when you transplant them, they also have some roots, you know, more roots to them once they get going. So they probably survive much better if you did it that way as well.
So if I pot them, what do I just use the soil that they're in the ground that they're in right now?
I would really use a potting soil.
Okay.
Because the soil, you know, soil just acts very different. Once you get it into a container, it kind of turns into a brick. So I would get potting soil, you know, something that's halfway decent, it's going to drain well and all that good stuff. So
fun.
Sure.
Real quick, I have another one. We have, we want to take some of our columbine with us too.
Mm-hmm.
And we were wondering, is it going to grow well down there? I know it's a native plant of Illinois, but I don't know if it grows everywhere.
Oh, it should do fine down there.
Okay.
It'll do fine. The one thing I will tell you that a lot of times I don't know if you've done this before, but the really big plants don't really like to be moved all that much.
Yeah.
Because they have a taproot. Yeah,
that's why I was worried about the lilac.
Right. Yeah. So I would definitely, on the columbines, if I was going to take some plants, I'd take some of the small ones. And then if you have time, I'd take some seeds with you as well.
Wonderful. Okay. Sure. Well, thank you so much for your advice.
Very good.
Thank you.
Well, let's go on here. The next caller is in Mattoon. This is line number three. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have three questions. I wonder if you could comment on. One is, there was an article in the paper about old coffee grounds, to throw them around your plants in the garden. It might be helpful. And I'm not just sure what all it's supposed to do. And another question was using grass that's been cut in the yard and throwing grass around like as a mulch.
Mm-hmm.
And the third question is, I've got a plant or two, tomato plant or two, that had a few spots on the lower leaves, and I just pulled the leaves off.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if there's anything else I should do, keep an eye on it.
Right. Right. Well, I, as far as using, the coffee grounds are fine. You know, they're great to put in the compost pile. I wouldn't expect any, magical thing to happen. Sometimes I've seen it listed that it's going to acidify the soil. Well, if you think of the small, if it truly would acidify the soil, then we'd all be dead by now because it would have acidified our stomachs a long time ago, which, there isn't enough of it that it's really going to change. But it's fine if people want to put coffee grounds around their plants. I think that's fine. I just wouldn't expect a lot.
Would it keep birds away?
I would be very surprised at that if it did. I wouldn't expect it to do any of that, to be honest with you. As far as keeping things away or whatever, it's really something, it's organic and it's just going to help, it's going to decompose and, just add more organic matter to the soil. And that's really what it's doing. Beyond that, I wouldn't expect it to do anything else. That's why, it's good in your compost pile and that's fine. I just wouldn't expect anything beyond that. As far as the grass clippings are fine if they're used in a couple different ways. If you've used an herbicide on them, you should wait at least three mowings before you use the grass clippings. There's some concerns about, especially with some of the broadleaf herbicides, that there might be something still there.
I haven't used anything like that.
Okay, then you're fine. Probably the other thing is that we recommend you do it in very shallow layers. So if you want to build up to 3 inches or whatever, don't just immediately put down 3 inches. Sort of build up. Just put an inch or so. Let that dry. Put another inch or so, let it dry. Because I don't know if you've ever been around grass clippings. If it's a really a big pile of it, it tends to sort of get very dry on the top, tends to sort of decompose and get kind of slimy in the center, and it actually sort of even keeps the water away from plants. So I would just do it in very shallow layers, and then that's fine if you want to use it for a mulch. As far as the tomato plants having disease problems, that's the number one thing. You did the perfect thing. Just you start seeing some leaf spot diseases, take those off because it's a fungus. You leave those on there, then that fungus can just transfer to all the other leaves. And sometimes we can do a pretty good job of keeping it down if you catch it early enough. So you did the absolute perfect thing.
Okay, don't need to spray anything right now.
I'm not sure. I'd sort of wait and see if it's one of those things where you find that you're having to take off more and more leaves and you're still not, being able to control it. You may find it. You want to look for some of the fungicides. The good thing is for a lot of those diseases, actually even things like there's a product called Remedy, and it actually is made from baking soda. So it's a, very safe product or comfortable with it and those kind of things. So the good news is you can control it, but if it just seems like it's getting out of hand and you have to take way too many leaves off, you may find you have to go ahead and spray.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good luck.
Next caller is in Whiteheath, and this would be line one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I am calling about a huge rhododendron bushes we have that have really gotten out of control now, and we're going to have to make a major cutback on them.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed on the in the original root area, there's a lot of new growth on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we just cut back, say, a major portion of these big branches, but leave that original roots, the roots and the original, I don't know what you want to call
mm-hmm.
it, will that still have the nourishment and everything to keep growing then?
It should. It's great that you've had, it's tough to prune back rhododendrons because they just don't leaf out the way a lot of the other deciduous kind of plants do. They just don't, leaf out from the stems themselves. So it's great that you have that. So it's nice, lush growth kind of down farther, and you're able
it's
to...
It's way down at the, practically at the ground level that they
oh, where it's coming out like
grow.
Suckers.
They have, well, because they, I don't know, they've started this for a few years, and the other stuff... you have these long branches, and they don't have any growth except white at the top, and they're about 10, 12 feet tall. It's awful. They're just out of control, and they don't even look nice anymore.
The rhododendrons themselves?
Yeah.
Just don't look nice anymore. It should be fine, as far as cutting them back, because normally we'd recommend not doing a whole lot of cutting back on them since they don't normally resprout. But if you've already got sprouts coming up, and if you actually, what you might want to do is sort of trim it back, not do a drastic cut, but sort of trim it back and let those things that are coming up get more light and kind of see how they are. And then the next year, maybe trim more off and just kind of do it maybe on a 3-year process to eventually sort of get it down lower than what you want it. Lower as you want it.
Yeah, well, it really, it's beginning to look disgusting almost.
Well, then I'd say go for it, because yeah. It sounds like you're ready to get rid of it anyway.
My husband's ready to, really have to make sure.
Yeah, but I trim it back now that it's, I assume it's already bloomed and done its thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I trim it back now and just let those areas get it some sun and then see what happens from there. But I think it sounds like you have a good probability of looking okay again.
Well, they seem to be like a lot of new growth under there that's
right.
been going on for a while, and I suppose it's just trying to keep going. And I don't know why it did this. I was surprised, but there's a lot of new growth down in the lower branches. So, okay, well,
good luck.
Okay, thanks. I might be calling you at your office. My neighbor said they're really mad that we're going to trim back.
Oh, really? Oh, I'm not getting in the middle of that one.
All right, thanks.
All right, thank you. And we'll keep going here. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Sandy Mason, horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Ask for her by name when you call the office. If you're having any disputes with the neighbors, she'll come right out and mediate for you. Crete is the next caller here, line 4. Hello.
Yeah, I have a couple of problems. In the walkway, we have dandelions and other weeds that should be destroyed. And around the house, we have a lot of poison ivy.
Ooh.
I need to know what to use for both of those problems. I'm sure they're different. I don't want to walk poison in from the front yard or
right.
the front stoop because I killed a dandelion and killed my cats. I also want to kill the poison ivy without killing the neighbor's dog. So what do you use?
Good idea. Those are good plans, good goals in life, I'd say. Now, when you say in the pathway, is this a brick path or is this concrete?
It's brick and stone walking from the car to the house.
Okay.
It's a very short area, but I just want to make sure I get the right substance.
Right. And is this an area that tends to have a lot of weeds and you get it on a regular basis?
It goes right out through the bricks.
Okay. Well, you might want to try, there actually is a new Roundup product that has the typical Roundup we would think of where it actually kills whatever green you spray it on. And as long as you just spray it on, it's not windy, read the label, all that good stuff, and just spray it on to what you want to kill, it really does a pretty good job of that. But it also has a pre-emergent in it, and it's really meant for those areas like driveways and walkways. Well, we know we're never going to, we never want to plant anything. It's just we just want to keep the weeds from coming back up again. So you may find that you like that particular product.
What's it called?
Roundup Extra or Roundup. It's in a gray bottle, or just ask the garden center, but it'll read the label and it'll say it has a post-emergent and pre-emergent. In other words, it takes care of weeds after they come out post, and it takes care of weeds before they come out pre.
And you won't walk poison into the house when you step on.
With all that, with any of these products, you always want to read the label. But with those kind of products, just wait until it dries. In other words, don't be walking on it. Don't let the cat walk on it, the dog walk on it, or whatever. But then once it dries, then you're fine.
Okay, and the poison ivy?
Poison ivy is a little different story. It's one of those things you might have to go with some of the brush killers. And there's a number of products out there like Brush Be Gone, and I'm sure there's a whole bunch of other ones that are meant for those woodier things. Roundup doesn't always kill all those all that well, but read the label. And do you have a really big vine or a bunch of little ones? Or?
I got vines across. I mean, Charles, you can swing on them.
Oh, wow. So those what you might want to do is, again, read the label if you haven't figured that out already. And it'll have something called cut surface treatment.
Uh-huh.
And read the label for that. And what that is, and I hope you're not allergic or you can find somebody who's not allergic, but you go out there and you actually cut the vine on those big ones like that, and then you actually use the product on that cut surface. That way you don't have to spray the whole vine or try to spray all the leaves on the vine.
Yeah, but if I get within 10 feet of a poison oak or poison ivy, I get itches.
You need to find somebody that isn't allergic either find somebody that isn't allergic or just cover from head to toe and then don't touch any of the clothing when you take it off. Have somebody, wear gloves, the whole thing. You're just going to be really careful because those oils will get on, as you probably know, on clothing and all that stuff too. So
I just want to spray it from a distance of 10 feet if possible, but nevertheless, I want to spray it and not touch it or get too close to it.
Right.
Well, you...
You can certainly use the Brush Be Gone type products, but to realize those will kill other things that are green.
Yeah.
And it would be more effective on these really big things if you could use something like the cut surface treatment. The other, if it's a big vine, you may have to spray it more than once. Okay. But if that's the only way you can do it, then that'll work too.
Thank you.
Well, good luck.
Thank you. And let's see. Next, we'll talk with someone in Decatur on line number two. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah. I just wanted to mention, in reference to the fellow that called about the coffee grounds around his plants.
Mm-hmm.
When we used to go fishing as kids, you know, we used to kind of try to raise our own worms.
Mm-hmm.
And you have an area. Well, we had it like in an old shed, you know, with boxes of dirt. But you put coffee grounds in. They earthworms grow really well in that.
Dirt,
and what they do around the plants and in your garden is they aerate the soil. The earthworms
mm-hmm.
do so.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you're doing with the coffee grounds. It doesn't do anything for the plants or the soil. It's good for the earthworms.
Sure, and the earthworms are good for the plants and the soil. So
they're kind of a step removed. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, great.
All right.
Thanks.
Well, okay, well, thanks for the tip. Well, now we know that earthworms like coffee.
Yeah, and how to grow. Yeah, they like
exactly.
coffee.
Well, I know that Starbucks, no pug intended, they package up grounds, and they have packages
stuff.
Of it, and you can just take, they give it away. Obviously, they have to just dump it, and they have lots of coffee grounds. And so you just go there, and you can just pick up a package of stuff and take it home. And I have used it maybe in the misgotten idea that the smell might help to keep away things like rabbits or, you know, things that might be eating on my plants. And unless, of course, you get rabbits that really like coffee and, you know, then you're in big trouble.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think part of the problem is, you know, a lot of that stuff, once it gets rained on a few times, it kind of loses
it. Loses that.
It's fragrance of sorts. So
yeah.
I did want to mention something else that's mm-hmm. coming up. It's National Pollinator Week. And I want to just remind people or let people know this is something that is a national program. It starts June 22nd. It's the whole week. And actually, if you go to the U of I into the plant biology website, I think they can give all the information about the National Pollinators Week.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be activities locally. People can learn more about bees. I know people are getting more and more concerned about honeybees, but there's lots of other native bees out there that might also be very much in trouble. So just really just want to let people know, maybe kind of keep up the radar of when you start seeing information about that. It should be good activities.
That's certainly, we've had conversations with May Barenbaum,
sure.
who's
and
the
she's
head
involved
of the Department
mm-hmm.
of Entomology. And that's one of the things that she's talked about, the fact that we do now have a lot of concern about the European honeybee being affected by a disease that they don't really quite understand
right.
yet. And that's really significant for the honey industry, but also for agriculture, because they're important pollinators. Particularly, one of the things that she's mentioned is that in California, the honeybees are very important to pollinate almonds. And so
favorite.
The almond growers are very concerned about this. But the other thing she said is, well, it's true that there are all kinds of honeybees. These honeybees are not native to the United States. Europeans, when they came here, they brought them. And she said, well, there are lots of native species of bees. But she says that many of them have not been that well studied because
mm-hmm.
they don't have they are not thought to have real commercial significance, so nobody has really studied them. So she said that you know, nobody really knows that some of the other bees, some of the native bees, could be having trouble, and we wouldn't really know it because we don't
right.
have that many people
right.
who are actually paying attention to what's going on with the wild native bees. So it's really and they do pollinate all kinds of different things, stuff that we eat, and just everything that's out there in the environment. So it's really important to that we know what's going on with them and
mm-hmm.
we take care
mm-hmm.
of them.
And they also started the locally, you can get involved in the Bee Spotters program. And I'm sure if you go to the Bee Spotters website, and I'm sorry I don't have the website for the National Pollinators Week, but I'm sure if you go to the Bee Spotters website as well, they can, or you just Google National Pollinators Week, it'll give you some ideas about what's going on locally and how you can get involved in the Bee Spotters
yeah.
group.
We have a couple minutes. If somebody wants to call real quick, we can get them in. We talked at one point about the Garden Walk.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming up on the 21st.
Yes,
Champaign
June
County.
21st. Gardeners.
Master Gardeners Garden Walk. But there are a couple of other things you'd like to talk about.
Well, we're also involved in the UBI Extension's also involved in the Master Naturalist Program, which is kind of that other end of things, maybe bees and all kinds of things out there, whether they're, you know, slithering or whatever they're doing out there, plants as well. So we're taking applications for the Master Naturalist Program here in the East Central Illinois area, and they can call us at 333-7672, or they can go to the U of I Extension Champaign County website and actually get an application online. It's a lot like the Master Gardener Program in that you go through training on a little of everything, prairies, forests, you name it, and then there's a community volunteer element to it as well. And if you're interested, tonight, June 10th, at 6 o'clock at the Champaign Public Library, the Master Naturalists are having a program open to the public about oak forest restoration, which is one of our native forests around here, and people may have some interest in that or just want to find out what's going on. You can find out more about the Master Naturalist Program tonight, 6 o'clock, Champaign Public Library.
Okay, it's not the community of Oak Forest. It's Oak Forest.
You're so quick. That's why you have the job you have.
And it's because nobody else wants it. Let's try and get at least one more caller here. Rantoul, line number one. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a quick question. I'm an indoor gardener, and tropical plants and colorful plants are what I like. I wondered if it would be possible to grow trumpet creeper vine indoors.
Wow. And still live. Because I'm afraid it might take you in at night.
At nighttime, it would come
after
you.
When you're sleeping, it might be a little shop of horrors. And I don't know. I think what you might find with a lot of those things is they'll grow, but they don't flower. And I think, and that's usually what a lot of those things that we, obviously want them for the flower. So I think you could probably get it to grow if you had enough light or if you had a sunroom or something like that. But how well it would flower, boy, I just don't know. That would be an interesting thing to find out. But, as you know, it's a very rampant vine.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to control it, those kind of things. So you might, I don't know, you might want to think about something a little bit different. If you're looking for a flowering vine, you might, I don't know if you know the Black-Eyed Susan vine.
Oh.
There's actually, they call it Black-Eyed Susan vine. It doesn't look exactly like that, but Thunbergii is the, I think that's the genus on it. But it comes in yellow and white. But it's an annual vine. But I think if you maybe look at some of those annual vines, you might find you get kind of that tropical look, but maybe not have quite the problems with getting into flower.
Well, thank you for the recommendation.
Good luck.
All right, thank you. Well, we're going to have to stop. I'm sorry that we have one caller that we can't take. In the meantime, if you have these kind of questions, look in the phone book because there are people all over the state that do what Sandy does.
Sure.
They're there to answer questions. You can go to the Extension website. There's lots of information there on gardening and taking care of the things in the home landscape. And if you're in range of our TV station, WILO-TV. We have a program called Illinois Gardener. It's on Thursday nights at 7 o'clock. Diane Nolan is the host. It's a live show. She has various kinds of people from the University of Illinois and from garden centers in the area. Occasionally, Sandy is on the program, and it's another opportunity to call in and ask questions. Particularly if you have some kind of problem, you can tune in for that show. So that's Illinois Gardener, Thursday nights, 7 o'clock, WILO-TV. And next month, Sandy will be back, and we'll do this again.
Great.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.